Welcome to week 6 of Private Practice Bootcamp, and this week is all about clinical logistics. So for some of you, some of this stuff is going to be way in the future, and it's not going to be what you're actually doing this week. That's completely fine. Don't feel like you're getting behind if you're not actually implementing some of these pieces. In some ways, it's a little bit of a break week because it's much more tangible, logistical. Here's just some information, and once you're actually at that stage, you can start making some of those decisions. So don't worry too much if some of these things are not happening this week. So I guess what we'll do is I'll throw it out to you guys at this point. As far as have you had a chance to look through this week's content?
Yeah,
just a little bit. Mm-hmm. I have. Yeah, I'm still kind of in week 5 kind of stuff. So I've just taken a look a little bit.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're alone there.
That's why no one's shown up today. They're all scared.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. This is usually the point where people are like, I'm just really busy. And then I have to go chase after a few people. And then usually in the next week or two, people will show up. But it's the halfway mark. And it's been, there's a lot of information. Mm-hmm. And up until last week, it was a lot of brain work, really, mm-hmm. of really self-exploration, business exploration, professional exploration, and that, as you know, can be a bit exhausting. Sometimes we hit a point where we just don't want to think anymore. So luckily, from now forward, for the most part, we're going to be building off of a lot of that kind of heavy brain lifting that we've been doing in those first few weeks. And now it's coming into a bit more rubber hits the road of, okay, so tangibly, if this is the type of business I want to create, here are now the next choices that I have in that sense. Hi, Carmen.
Hi. Sorry,
late. No, that's okay. So we're just saying how this is the beginning of the more tangible pieces.
Gotcha.
And this goes for everyone. If you're not doing some of the tangible pieces right now, that's mm-hmm. totally fine. You're going to have the handouts. You're going to have this available to you. Really, my goal with this is by the time we hit the end of the program, whether you've had a chance to implement all of this information or not, you're still going to have that framework that you're going to be able to go back and revisit and rework. So even if it's this month or 6 months from now that you're actually implementing some of these pieces, mm-hmm. you're going to have the map with you, even once the program's over.
Okay.
So I guess given what we were covering this week, are there any questions about the phone or email or any of those pieces? I'm happy to clarify. Some of it's just more of a what works for you.
I've got a question actually about keeping files and everything.
Okay.
So I was told by somebody, so I'm starting a new contract next week, mm-hmm. and one of the clinicians that had this contract last said mm-hmm. that what he was doing was he was keeping files in a locked briefcase, mm-hmm. and then he was bringing his briefcase home and then had a locked filing cabinet at home. Like, the nature of the job, it's a lot of outreach stuff.
Okay.
So we're going into the community doing, I mean, it's helpful to have the file on hand, but, so I'm just thinking about logistics for, you know, when your office is outside of the traditional setting, and if you know of any best practices from colleagues or that you've used, or if anyone else on the call maybe could have any feedback as well.
Well, I'll throw it out to the people on the call first, and I'll throw in my 2 cents. Has anyone else ran into this in agencies that you've been involved with?
I mean, I know someone in private practice who rents out office space by the hour, and that's sort of what she does. She has like a locked briefcase or something or other, and that's how she transports her files back and forth. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's exactly the same, but...
Yeah, okay.
It's pretty common practice. It's not perfect, mm-hmm. Because really, unless it's on your person at all times, like if you were to say, put that briefcase in a car and your car gets stolen or, you know, mm-hmm. there's just, because of the transportation piece, it just opens up more possibilities for something to happen. You set it down, accidentally get up, like unless it's essentially attached to you, it's just making it that much harder to really maintain the security. I know that that's generally what people do in those circumstances. Another potential that you may want to look into is online record keeping. I know with the agencies, sometimes they don't want to do that because if one person's doing that and somebody else can't access it, or kind of everybody needs to be almost using the same system or else it doesn't work. You know, so for myself, I use a bit of a combination of online records and paper records. So, and the system I use, like, so Clinico is what I use for all of, it's my client management system, as well as my, it does my accounting, it does my, my pretty well everything, basically. So if at this moment I needed to pull up client contact details, I could, even though I'm at my home office versus my office downtown.
Constance, could you say the name of the program again?
Yeah, it's Clinico.
Clinico?
Yeah, if you go to just thebusinessofhelping.com, there's a tab at the top that says Private Practice Business Tools.
Okay. And
it's the first one in there.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah,
so you can go check it out there. Actually, if you use the link on the website, you get your first month for free. So,
oh.
There you go. But for me, that's what I use, and it has bank level encryption. And so it's, you know, obviously I have to put in passwords, and you can put double authentication in there. And, you know, so for me, that's what I use for most things.
Awesome.
Yeah. The only reason I don't use it for my actual paper notes is because I'm very much a dyslexic typer. And it actually takes me twice as long to type things as it does to handwrite them, because I have to then go back and correct the fact that I've managed to spell words entirely backwards and inside out and wrong. It has the capability though for that. And what I've done in some cases, if somebody say brings in a form or something like that, is I'll actually scan it and upload it into their profile. So I actually have, I can put pictures, I can put whatever I need in there. And then I could just do all of my notes in there, and you can create like a template form for your notes if you have certain things you always have to record on. It has a lot of really great options, and plus it does all of my accounting as well.
Brilliant. So, yeah.
So it's my calendar. It sends out my appointment reminders. It creates my invoicing, sends out my invoicing, tracks all of my income. Like it's $45 a month, basically. And it's the best money I spend every single month.
So awesome.
If you're looking for something, I really can't recommend it enough. If they're saying you have to go the paper route, unfortunately, the locked briefcase back and forth and just making sure that it's locked securely at both ends is the option. It's just one. It's one that always made me nervous.
Yeah, well, same here. It was, yeah, I felt a bit uncomfortable about it.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to have everything accessible online as well, so I can access it from multiple locations, but not worry about, you know, stuff being stolen from my home. I mean, not that people are likely going to want to come and take a bunch of files from my office. But it's, again, just having that stuff at home, for me, it feels like, I don't know, it's the boundary isn't quite there between the work and,
Well, the thing that I find that's really nice about it, so like, for instance, Maydeen and I had our call at 4, and then I actually had a session, a phone session with a client at 5. And because I don't transfer my client notes back and forth, even if I know I'm going to be having a phone session from my home office, I can then, for that client, all of their information I can access from home, and then I can, in specific situations, I'll upload their notes. So again, I don't just have like a piece of paper that I'm going to have to remember to take into the office when I come in. So, and also too, sometimes I'll see clients when I'm traveling, or else if I have to call someone back, like I was in Australia and had a client that called and really needed to talk to me, and they didn't leave their phone number in the message. So I was able to still get in touch because I was able to just pull up their phone number from my record, even though I was technically in a different day. You know, so there's benefits. I'm a really big fan you know, as you can tell, even with like the emergency contingency plan, like I really like having backups for everything when it comes to my business, particularly when it comes to my counseling practice, mm-hmm. just given the nature of the information that we're dealing with. So I like the fact, like for me, I have my paper files that have where they, you know, all of their information. So if for some reason I couldn't access the online site, which has never happened, but if for some reason I couldn't, I still could technically get into my office and be able to access their information there, but also vice versa. If I can't access my paper files for some reason, I'm still able to at least get in touch with them if I had to, or pull up their address if I had to, or whatnot. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that's the one that I use. There are other ones. For what it provides, I've never found anything that actually provides all the services it does for the price that it does. I know there's a few other ones, I think like Simply Practice or Simple Practice. And there's a couple other ones that they're all US pricing, whereas this is an Australian company. And so our dollar is stronger than theirs, which never happens when it comes to software. whereas most of the ones in the States, I find are probably about $60 a month and it's US dollars. And they generally don't have the accounting side of them. They might have the scheduling, but usually not the invoicing side. So that's what I use.
Okay.
Yeah. Good question.
Thanks,
great. Anyone else around kind of some of the logistical pieces?
Here.
No? All right. I mean, really, there isn't necessarily a right way to do a lot of this stuff. It is going to be a matter of what's going to work for you, what do you have available, you know, what does your practice look like. But, you know, I have a bit of a soapbox when it comes to having a business phone that's separate than your personal phone. And that is totally my own soapbox. I know tons of therapists who use their personal phone as their business phone and they get by just fine. So if that's the route that you want to go, absolutely feel free. For me, it was really just more around business boundaries. After you've been stalked by a few clients, it just got to a point that, you know, I didn't want my personal phone number out there ever really after that.
Wow. So you actually did get stalked by a client?
Yes. So, you know, it happens, you know, particularly when you work with some of the populations that I do, unfortunately, you know, and it was very early on and it was someone that now I would have been able to pick out right away that it wouldn't have been someone I would work with now. But it was very early on. And when I kind of felt like, oh, well, maybe I should, and I guess so, even though my spidey sense was saying, I don't really think this is appropriate. And so he would call my phone every hour on the hour, pretty well all night long, so that he could listen to my voice on the answering machine. And after that happened, it was a bit of a wake-up call of maybe I'd been really lucky up until that point. All my clients had been amazing. And so it just never occurred to me that there was an issue. Whereas after that, I realized, okay, and I'm glad that I have. I've had, you know, once your name and your phone number are out publicly, really anyone can access it. And that's not to say that I had a lot of harassers, particularly, again, the populations that I work with. When you advertise working in sex therapy, sometimes you get some interesting phone calls that people might not. But it's nice to be able to really just turn work off. And for me, I found that to be a really, really important to just know that I can take my personal cell phone with me. And if I want, I can just leave my business phone at home even. And I can't check it even if I wanted to. I mean, this is my work phone, which is, people laugh at me. They don't actually know little flip phones still exist. It has no data on it. They can't, I don't let my clients text me. It's really just, it's almost like a glorified answering machine. It's very good peace of mind for me, at least. just looking here.
One of the questions I had was, again, and I think you spoke about this in the workshop a little bit, but maybe you could talk about a little bit more, sort of the pros and cons of going for an hourly office space rental versus maybe booking, renting something, you know, on a part-time, a day or two a week, something like that.
I guess it depends on... It depends on how far along in your business planning you are and what else you have going on. So for people who are kind of slowly dipping a toe in but really aren't fully ready to have a full private practice but want to at least be able to, if somebody were to call, you're wanting to at least have a space that you could see them in, that's where the hourly rental places are quite, they're perfect because it gives you a location, but there's actually no overhead for you unless you actually have a client. The downside is you can't really say what your hours are because it's going to depend on what's available. So usually a client would call, you'd say what time frames work for you in this ballpark, and then they would have to give you a few different options. You would call the company and say, you know, is there anything available between kind of 2 and 6 on this day? They would let you know, and you'd have to call them back. So there's a little bit more back and forth with it, but from a cost perspective, especially if you're only seeing maybe 1 or 2 clients a month at the beginning, it's really the easiest way to do that. Whereas with part-time space, you're actually renting someone's office for maybe a half day or a full day or a couple days, and those are your dedicated times. So whether there's people coming in or not, that is your space, that is yours to fill. And again, really great because if you were doing hourly and started to get busy, the cost of an hourly office would easily outweigh the cost of renting one of these spaces part-time monthly quite quickly. You know, so for example, I rent out my office space for $250 a day. You know, so really as long as, and that's $250 for, so if somebody's in my office on Fridays, they get all 4 Fridays of that month for $250. And in Vancouver, that's pretty standard. You know, so if you look at it and you basically need to say 3 clients, or, you know, really 2.5-ish, and any other client you see for the rest of the month is profit. So it can quickly become a very, very negligible expense. And I just find too, it's good because you have the incentive, I guess. You're paying for the space, so you quickly start to feel like you need to fill it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I'm kind of torn about, is that a part of me feels like, okay, if I actually rented a space that I knew, okay, I'm in the space, you know, every Friday or, you know, whatever day it is, I feel like that it would create a kind of discipline that, okay, even if I didn't have a client, I would use that time for marketing, advertising, brainstorming, workshop. But then, yeah, there I also see, oh, but, you know, if I'm basically losing money every month, but...
I wouldn't necessarily, if you're using if you're actually using the space like you're talking about, which is when I started, that's what I did, of whether I had a client or not, I went to work. And you'd be amazed at how quickly you will get clients. Mm-hmm. Because if every week you're actually putting in consistent hours on marketing or networking or building your site or just really that time and that energy, it starts to pay off. Whereas when it's all kind of put in the energy when the momentum is built, it's almost a faulty logic of like, I'll work hard when it gets easy.
And I'm actually also concerned about like trying to book something hourly. It feels kind of stressful to me.
And like it depends on the space. Some of the spaces are really lovely. Some of them you can book online. Like there are some that are easier than others. For me, I just wanted a space where I knew where everything was. And because some of them you might not even get the same office every time. So you're kind of, for me, I really like I have my, this is when I'm counseling, like I can tell if my chair is moved like 4 inches to the side. Just this is the way I like my counseling space set up. And so I started out renting 2 days a week off of someone else. And then within, I get really, it was within the first 2.5 months, I was already over capacity in that space. So it can happen quickly. If you have all of your pieces in place, it can happen relatively quickly. I got my first clients, I think, within 2 weeks of renting the space and my everything going live. And then I think after the first month, I already had 6 clients.
Wow.
When things are in place, it can happen relatively fast. But also, whether I had clients or not, for 2 days, I was in there and I was making phone calls and I was tweaking content and I was connecting with people. And, there was a lot happening during that time. So it wasn't like I just kind of waited for clients to show up. And we'll definitely be talking about that in the marketing piece. But, I was going for coffee and drinks and lunch probably 2-3 times a month with different people, and just getting myself in front of people and getting myself known by people, or reminding certain people who I already knew that, hey, I have a practice now and, this is what I do, and send them my way. So it definitely wasn't passive time. So that's where, for me, I really liked having that commitment of, this is my time and I'm either going to fill it with me working to connect with people, or I'm going to fill it seeing clients. No. But whereas if it's, even for some of you now at this point where you're getting some of those pieces in place, but maybe not all of them have really formalized, but you still want to be able to potentially see a client if they were to call you, or if someone referred someone to you, that's where the hourly is great. It's almost a bit of a bridge to get you to, okay, now I actually figured out where I want my office to be, and I'm really ready to build this. So, thanks, Nadine.
Thank you. It's very helpful.
So, does anyone have any questions about the emergency contingency plan? Because I know that that's one that sometimes throws people a little bit.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I don't really know who I would have as my backup person, like another therapist. Especially being new to a community.
Yeah.
I've got connections in the Lower Mainland. But yeah, I'm just kind of thinking that one through in terms of being in a new place and setting that up and what that could look like.
Well, and that's where it could be somebody over here, really. Mm-hmm. Ideally, it's someone who would be able to access your record.
Yeah.
I don't know what that noise was. Freaking bird. So again, for me, because my records are online, what I have is I have the password to my online software that's in a sealed envelope that the person who's my designate, they have that. So that way it's sealed. They don't have access to it unless they need to open it, but that's how they would be able to find out. And in there is who I'd be seeing that week. And is all of the contact details of those people. So they'd be able to do that. So again, depending on the way that your records are stored, if you're storing them in an online fashion, it actually doesn't matter where the person is. Whereas if it's paper-based, then it would just be, somebody would need to be able to access the records to be able to contact whoever your clients were that week.
Okay.
So if you have a supervisor, or, even someone at the agency that you're getting work there, they may be able to do that just as an interim. And again, it's not a have to have this set up the first day you open your practice. It's just something I find a lot of people don't ever think about. So even if you kind of figure it out as you go, once you do find a person, then you can set it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never heard anybody, mention that. And it's a really good idea. Yeah. You never really know.
Well, and with any other business, it's fine if it's your power of attorney, really.
Yeah.
Whereas when it comes to the clients that we're working with, it may be actually quite devastating for someone who may already be in a bit of a fragile state to find out that you were, even if you were just broke your ankle, that might be really devastating for somebody.
Of course.
Let alone if you're no longer able to be their therapist. So that's where, for me, I always think it's just better to have a trained person
would at least be able to do that crisis containment, be the person making phone calls, as opposed to maybe your person who might already be going through their own stuff, having to then try to send that information forward. So. And it's something too, you may want to check with your a lawyer, depending on the complexity of the clients that you're working with. You know, what I provided is by no means a legal document. It was just more here are the things that should probably be covered in there. But it's a good place to start, at least. Okay. Well, and what we can do, I mean, we have 15 minutes left, is this week really, it's the moving into some of the tangible pieces, but also we're still catching up. I know a lot of people in some cases, even all the way back to week 2 and week 3. So if there's anything really up until now that you're feeling stuck on, or maybe you're realizing that you want a little more clarity on, we can also use that time here. So I'll throw it out to the people on the call if you have any questions.
There is actually something I'm kind of curious about, and I'm still really interested in this idea of, what I've noticed that there seems to be a bit of a shift where counselors are presenting more of themselves to clients in terms of what they put on their websites, just from kind of the research I've done. It's just something that I'm really curious. I'm just really curious about if that's something that is, if that's a phenomenon that we're going to see more of, where counselors are actually coming across as sort of more personable, more approachable, more human. They seem to be revealing more about themselves from some of the websites that I've looked at. I don't know.
I think that's definitely happening. Why it's happening, I'm not entirely sure. I know why I did it is because it works. I know for me, when I look for people, I'm not really that impressed by credentials, although I'm still looking. Like, if it's somebody who needs to be credentialed, I want to make sure that they have whatever letters they need. But after that, I'm picking people based on, do I feel like you're going to get me? You know? And that's really what they're finding as far as what's working in marketing really across the board is people really choose based on how they feel, you know? Do you feel trustworthy? Do you feel like you understand me? You know, that's really more important. And it's still, the difference with therapists, I see this in a lot of like other service providers where they may often go through and share really deeply personal pieces about their story because that's really their way of connecting. Of like, see, I'm just like you, but I overcame something. And that's, it's a little bit of a different model because when it comes to counseling, we're not trying to connect to people on a friend-to-friend level.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Whereas with things like coaching or some of the other wellness professions, that's actually often where people are coming from because they maybe don't have the level of training. And that's not to say they're not very good at what they do, but it is really more coming from a place of life experience plus some maybe training to help them hone kind of their natural tendencies. But it's not coming from a place of, I have spent, you know, 7 to 10 years of my life learning about these things.
Yeah.
So in those cases, I do find that really the way that they're going to be able to connect is through, here's my story of transformation, and I can help you transform as well. Whereas counselors, we have a little bit of a different responsibility and a different line to dance because in order for us to be effective, there does need to be a bit of separation between us and our clients. We can't be coming in as, I'm just like you, I'm your buddy, you know, here's my journey, let's do it together. So it's being mindful with whatever you're sharing on your site. We want it to be personable and professional and still with that lens of, if I had my most difficult client in front of me, would I feel comfortable sharing this information? You know, which I find often for me changes what I would share.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whereas there's some clients that I have who, you know, have really strong boundaries and you're very high functioning that I would probably share maybe a little bit more about my story if it was appropriate for what was happening for them. Whereas I have other clients where I absolutely would not, because it wouldn't be helpful and it would actually probably hinder the work that we needed to do.
Right.
You know? So that's where when it comes to writing your story and sharing your values is we need to keep that lens, that therapeutic lens of how is me sharing this information helpful to my client and helpful to the potential work that we might do together.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So again, like with my site, and it's by no means the gold standard, but that's what I have right now. Anything that I share with clients, it's personal and yet not too personal. You know, it's actually, it's revealing something about me, but nowhere in there do I talk about my family. Nowhere in there do I talk about my personal relationships. Nowhere do I really talk about my real kind of personal background. Because with the clients I work with, it wouldn't be appropriate. There's a lot of transference, counter-transference that can happen with the population that I work with. And so that can, the more they feel like I'm their friend, the less effective I can be for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I like what you said as well about also considering what kind of transference issues might come up with the specific population you're working with.
Yeah, because for some it's much less relevant, and for others that's actually going to be key. You know, so I know for you, Carmen, you had talked about a book, and I think Nadine, you had made reference to that. You know, those are ways that we can share personal. We can be transparent about these are things that I like, but me saying I really resonate with a certain book, that's actually not telling you about my deepest, darkest secrets, but it is telling you this is maybe the way that I view the world, or this is the way I view healing, or this is something that just really made sense to me. So it's still personal, but it's not so much of a here's my deepest, darkest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's where sometimes hobbies and, you know, and for some people sharing aspects of their family life is something that is going to be really appropriate. I know a lot of people will say, oh, I'm a mother of three, or, I share this place with my partner, or I have two dogs, or whatever it is. And again, for them, that's going to be really appropriate. My partner, he's kind of always said, you know, I don't want anything about me ever online because so much of my life is online. So that's our deal, is I don't talk about him online. So that's there'd be never anything about me and my personal relationships that I would be sharing with clients online out of respect for a boundary that he's asked for. You know, so it's really kind of looking at given who you are and what your personal boundaries are. If you're a very private person, then that's okay to still stay private, but then disclose things from a more professionally transparent way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like the books that really influence you, or even just a favorite kind of music, or something that is still giving just a little window into who you are, but without necessarily saying, you know, here's what I do, and here's what makes me cry, and here was my biggest heartbreak in my life. We don't necessarily have to share those pieces. No. We would share that with a friend, we would share that with a colleague, but we wouldn't necessarily share that with our clients. No, so like, you know, in mine, I used to be a first mate on a sailboat. No. There's nothing about that I feel like would influence a client to kind of see me in a certain way, other than I like doing things outside. No, I like doing extreme things. Great. And that's a real connector point for a lot of people. If they like sailing, if they like, you know, the ocean, if they like whatever, there's just that little sense of, oh, you get me.
Yeah.
As we share that piece. No, so it doesn't have to be huge. It can just be these tiny little windows. Oh, does that help clear that piece up? Because I know there was a few people who were kind of circling around trying to figure out what to put in their bios.
Yes, that is helpful.
Okay.
Yeah. It's almost like creating, well, I don't want to say creating a persona, but, you know, creating a, oh, well, almost creating a professional persona.
It's a personal brand.
Yeah.
And there is, like, you have to sit in the role, your role as therapist. You know, so the person I am when I am a therapist is different than the person I am when I'm out with friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I share different parts of myself. I'm still me, but what I choose to disclose is going to be different. So you always want to be thinking about anything that you're putting online, anything about your marketing, anything about your branding. You know, that's like the extra layer as therapists that we have to consider that other people in other industries don't, is therapeutically, what is the impact of what it is that I'm about to share?
Mm-hmm.
Which other people don't have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the thing with, you know, if you're an acupuncturist, you are not going to be less effective at acupuncture if the person thinks that you're their friend or not. Therapists would be.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it's just a little bit of a different lens.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Thanks, Nadine. I was going to circle back to that, so it was a good good segue. All right. So any other questions about this week or any of the other week or the branding or ideal client?
I've got a question about writing your story or writing your bio.
Yeah.
And so for writing your bio, I'm just thinking about credentials and trying to kind of establish yourself and your credibility in the opening paragraph. And something that I've been thinking about is, like, I've worked in the helping profession for 6 years, but only 2 of those years have been as a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious, like, in terms of wording, how I've kind of worded it at this point, is that I've been, well, just kind of like what I said there. I've worked in a number of capacities within the helping profession for 6 years and, like, within these roles kind of thing. And
I personally feel like that's fine. As long as you're not misrepresenting your credentials.
Okay.
A lot of people come to the helping professions, you know, I mean, really, when you look at it, being a counselor isn't a designated profession, so anyone can call themselves a counselor. So you don't only become a therapist once you get your degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when you become a licensed therapist. That's when you become a fully trained therapist. But you can be in the helping professions and really be doing great supportive work for people in a slightly different capacity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before that. So again, that's kind of a personal line for people. I think if you were saying I've been a therapist for the last 6 years, that would be different. But if you're saying, you know, I've worked in the helping professions, absolutely. You know, I've had my own private practice for 5 years, but I've been doing counseling in various forms for probably the last 9 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So. You know, really, I've been doing therapy for 9 years, but officially under with designations and whatnot, I mean, I officially graduated in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, there are ways that we can still highlight the experience that we have without misrepresenting it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and we don't want to undervalue the fact that you have all of those years of experience prior to.
Yeah, it's hard writing that bio.
It is.
I'm noticing just like the wordsmithing, like that takes me a lot of time to be really intentional with my language.
Yeah.
And it's really a work in progress.
Yeah.
You know?
I still go back and tweak my bio and my everything. You know, you hit a certain point where you just have to say it's good enough for now. But then you go back and you review it, and is there anything that needs to be changed? And you know, for me, if I refer to, I've been in the helping professions for X amount of years, well, next year I need to change that number.
And yeah, sure.
So there's always those things where you just have to constantly be reviewing.
But there's the this is the good enough version that gets up, and then you can just go back and tweak it every few weeks until you feel like it's as good as it needs to be, and then you just leave it for a while.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Exactly. It's never going to be perfect. It's probably one of the best things I got from my master's was a professor who made us all write it down on sticky notes. I actually still have it somewhere here. It fell down off my wall. That it basically just says, it is good enough. Mm-hmm. And he made us all write it out on sticky notes and put it on our laptops. And he was talking about our thesis. But I really found it's very translatable. Sometimes it just has to be good enough, and it's not going to be perfect. And I could punch holes in most of the copy on any of my websites, but it's working. It's getting me clients. It's kind of moving my business forward, and I can always tweak it as I go.
Yeah, totally. Thanks, Constance.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, so that brings us to the end for tonight. Again, any questions about really kind of your personal circumstances as far as the phones and emails and all of that other fun stuff, feel free to post it in the group. And same with any of the copy. I know there's been a few people who've been posting things and we've been going back and forth on them. Because that also really helps when we do the one-on-one calls, is then we can really dig into it even more. But if I've at least been able to see it and we've been able to work it a little bit in the group, it just means we can do a lot more with it when we do the one-on-one calls.
Okay.
And for any of you that haven't booked, the link to my online calendar is just, it's in the group, the first thing there. You have until the end of the program, so there's no rush, but if you are wanting one, that's where you would go to get it.
Cool.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a great night, everyone.
Thanks, Constance. Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.